Good evening. James McCanna here with my Science Hour for May 30th, 2019. And I apologize, I missed last week's show. Actually, I was here frantically trying to get things put together. But let's just suffice to say that I had some technical problems. And I actually got a little part of the show done, about 5 minutes worth, but it was not, they basically had to re-air last week's or the previous week's show. And that was, by the way, a very good show worth listening to twice. That is the May 16th show, in which I give the top 10 reasons why global climate change is a hoax and myth. The scientific reality, something that nobody talks about. You have people running around, jumping up and down, basically putting out what is, basically we call it science porn, fear porn. In 12 years where everybody's going to die, they're teaching this to little kids, it's absurd. There is no such thing as a greenhouse effect in an atmosphere. And I go through all of the reasons. I'm not going to repeat it here, but go listen to that show, May 16th, to the great climate change hoax, as one might call it. But anyway, last week, I'm sorry, I apologize, I missed the show. And that's very rare. But like I say, due to completely to technical difficulties, I was here trying to put it together. And I could have recorded something afterwards, and I actually tried to, but about 80% of it was lost. Like I say, I was having some serious difficulties. May have had a little help from our friends in that too. But okay, tonight I'm going to be talking briefly about the tornadoes, 50 tornadoes in 6 states. Just horrific weather, people's lives destroyed, and the weather issue. I was asked on the John Moore Show yesterday morning if this could have been, of course, the implication, could it have been manipulated, or what's going on with the weather. And I've been very busy with some other things recently, but I'll tell you something also, that there are no good weather sources available to the public anymore. There was a time, go back in history a little bit. There was a time when there were over 60 solar observation stations on planet Earth. And now these are research centers funded with your tax money, a lot of them, or with funding from governments from around the world. But solar observatories. So these are like solar telescopes that are on Earth with the equipment to monitor the sun and all of the properties of the sun. Of course, it's best to see the sun from outside of our atmosphere because so much of the sun's light and radiation is blocked by our atmosphere. But about 60 of these, I believe they're still in existence, but they simply chopped the feeds from these at one time. So all of them went under. And remember the incident about a year ago, I think it was, where they cleared all of the people out of a solar observatory. And it was a very strange thing. And the only reason we knew about it is somebody on the way out tweeted, and they weren't supposed to do that. They were told to keep it shut up. But basically, they cleared out this solar observatory and quite a few other ones from around the world at the same time, and then claimed it was due to the story didn't make any sense at all. They brought in federal agents and scoured the whole area, and they said it was due to some guy had some child pornography on site. Well, that would be a local issue. Not, you wouldn't bring in federal agents to go through the entire place because of something that could have been handled by the local sheriff. And the local sheriff said he was very angry because he was not even consulted. The federal agents came in, shut it down, threw everybody out. And these kind of things have happened also at observatories. So we know that these solar observatories still exist, but there's not a shred of information coming out of them to the public. Now we have the situation, the only relatively decent site up to this point, and it really wasn't very good at all, was in telecast. And that went away. That was owned by the Rothschilds. Spaceweather.com, owned by the Rothschild. And so there's a complete ownership of information regarding weather that gets to the public. So you can only see now what is very carefully filtered and screened before it ever gets to the public. There's this Wonderground, or I don't know what it is, but what a terrible, terrible site. The information, the presentation is terrible, and it's not worth even going to. And the NOAA sites are terrible. They don't give out any information, and all the satellite feeds are very filtered before they get to you. So anyway, there's just no reporting available to the world on weather. So when we have like 50 tornadoes at once, there's no way to get real information about this. It's completely obfuscated, hidden, filtered. Basically, there's nothing available for the public to see anymore. Last Sunday, there was an earthquake, an 8.0 in Peru. It was in the northeastern section of Peru, near the Ecuador border and quite a ways away from the ocean. But 8.0, and it was felt in Lima, Peru, quite a distance away. But it was felt all over South America and through the Caribbean. Apparently, they felt it in Puerto Rico. So that's a long ways away. And, of course, Puerto Rico is a earthquake-active region, very earthquake-active region. In Puerto Rico, there's 11 earthquakes per day on average. And they're little teeny earthquakes, and it's very good because that means the plates are slipping little by little and not building up to where there's one big exchange movement. Okay, but the first thing that happened is with this earthquake in Peru, there was a lot of misinformation all over the place that this was due to a planetary alignment and that somebody predicted it. Well, let me tell you something. People that predict earthquakes due to, what, planetary alignments or something, it's a hoax because every day, literally every day, there are major earthquakes someplace on planet Earth. And so if you say, next January 12th, there's going to be a major earthquake, there probably will be. Because there are major earthquakes every day. So it's a pretty easy thing to try and predict, which is pretty ludicrous. But anyway, let me go into this baloney about a planetary alignment. Number one, there are no planetary alignments at all at this time. And even if there were planetary, their implication was that it was due to gravity, that somehow this planetary alignment would tug on Earth the gravity and cause earthquakes. Well, relative to everything else in outer space, we are gravitationless, and that's why astronauts in orbit around the Earth, or if they go to the moon or pretend to go to the moon, they would be weightless. Because they're going along, moving along a free path in outer space, so they would the pull of gravity. Would cause them to move in the direction of that pull of gravity and thus remains gravitationless or weightless. So Earth is weightless relative to all other celestial bodies. But to repeat, there was no planetary alignment at all. And so how these stories get started and who propagates them is clearly propagated on purpose. The other issue is that the moon and the sun create tidal forces. Now, tidal forces are secondary differential forces. Then, in other words, one side of the Earth is closer to the moon than the other side. Therefore, it pulls up. There's a differential force. It pulls up a little more on the close side, and it doesn't pull quite as hard on the far side, which causes a bulge in the Earth's oceans by a little bit. And this is what causes the tides. And that couples with the same type of effect from the sun. But all of the other planets and moons and objects in the solar system are too far away and too small for this sort of differential force, which is called, literally, it's a differential force, or it's called a tidal force. And so therefore, once again, the moon was 90 degrees. It was in the first phase of the moon, and so it was not an issue with creating couple tidal forces with anything else. So none of this story was true, yet it was propagated all over the place. Okay, I received this from a listener. The NASA and related agencies are recording gamma rays. Now, gamma rays, if you go in, if you look at the electromagnetic spectrum, it starts out with microwaves, then infrared, then visible light, then ultraviolet, then far in ultraviolet, then X-rays, then gamma rays. So gamma rays are the most energetic form of electromagnetic radiation, only thought to come from super big explosions when neutron stars collide or something in the depths of deepest outer space, intergalactic space. But lo and behold, they've been measuring them daily, not just once in a great while, but daily all over the world. And so they had a little video explanation of this, and it was so ridiculously wrong, absolutely goofy. And so they had a picture of a cloud, and they said, okay, the cloud creates charge. They don't say how this happens, but it just magically the cloud creates charge, and then the electrons come shooting out of the cloud at relativistic speeds, and they don't say how this happens either. I mean, it's just bizarre to see the pitiful state of professional astronomy, physics, astrophysics, atmospheric physics. It is so lame. It is so disgustingly bad that I just don't even know where to start. And so anyway, that's their explanation for why there are gamma rays in our atmosphere. And the real reason is because the clouds are discharging the vertical electric field, and the pulses are strong enough that the light given off is up into the gamma ray region. Elves and sprites are commonly seen above thunderstorms, but they're many times associated with X-rays, which are very energetic electromagnetic radiation also. But I just found it comical that, and this was on space.com, supposedly the premier intelligent source for information about space. Space.com is just a mouthpiece, and that's all it is for standard science, which is basically lame science. Okay, yesterday, 100 years earlier, the Eddington experiment occurred, May 29th, 2019, or I'm sorry, 1919 was the day that there was a solar eclipse out in the South Atlantic Ocean on an island, and Arthur Eddington did an experiment that allegedly proved general relativity. And there again, I saw a little video clip, and they have these bubble-headed, little, young, totally green publicists, or I don't know what you'd call them, basically journalists. I guess journalism would be the term, although it's really not journalism. Journalism requires intelligent thought, analysis, etc. There's no such thing as journalism today. It's just repetitive, one step above monkey repeating what they see another monkey do. Monkey see, monkey do, monkey say. That's journalism for today. But anyway, Eddington cherry-picked the data, and I've proven this. I show it. I also, in my DVD number 4, the course, university-level astronomy, astrophysics, space science course that I have online, it's an e-downloadable DVD. I proved that Eddington cherry-picked the data, which means that he selected only the points of the data that actually confirmed, so to speak, not really confirmed, but would corroborate his idea that there should be movement of stars around the sun, in other words, bending of light. But his experiment of there was probably about 20 data points, that is stars, and only about 4 of them actually moved somewhat in the radial outward direction. The rest of them moved by much different amounts in different directions. So he cherry-picked the data and published it, and then just there was worldwide headlines. Einstein himself was very much against this and very much basically he was drowned out. Einstein was drowned out. And Eddington and a few other people claimed that they were these intelligent beings. But 100 years of bad science, coupled with 100 years, about the same amount of time, actually about 1905 is when Hubble began the Big Bang baloney. So there's literally 100 years of really bad science that's gone down the complete wrong road. You have people that are taking pictures of black holes. And I just have another commentary on the picture of the black hole. There are other so-called pictures of black holes. There's no black spot in the middle, but it's literally due to they're seeing X-rays, what they're seeing. It's with the Chandra X-ray telescope. But what they're seeing are electrical discharges, not relativistic. So they're incorrectly interpreting data, which is clearly linear electrical discharges. The whole issue with general relativity is that these would be perfectly spherical structures, and it's not what they're seeing. As just imagine that there's material surrounding a black hole very far out from the event horizon, and it's allegedly falling in. So as it falls in, it accelerates and it gives off light, X-rays. And as it gets closer and closer, the X-rays become more and more redshifted. So there should be a very specific signature of redshifted as you get closer and closer to the alleged black hole. The light should be more and more redshifted, and it's not. It is not. It's just as simple as that. What they're seeing is the remnants of the, electrical discharges. So 100 years of bad science, and it keeps counting. Remember, it was 300 years before the Copernican model of the solar system came into acceptance. 300 years. So are we in for another 300-year hiatus? I think so. I think so. There's evidence now that NASA, they are, here's something that's going on too. They're creating videos that are propounding that NASA faked the moon landings. But the videos are so ridiculous that they are just beyond ridiculous. So they're creating both sides of the narrative. So they're creating the NASA didn't go to the moon hoax videos at an extremely childish level. I looked at one for a few minutes, and here's a guy that's putting up posters, and it shows the astronauts with little cartoon animals in it. And it is so poorly done that only a complete moron would believe this. And so, but that's the point, of course. They are creating both sides of the narrative, and they've erased hundreds, if not thousands, if not tens of thousands of videos that were critical of them going to the moon. Then you have space.com going on, and they had this little video, a guy with a little tam on that was a complete moron. I don't know where they dug this guy up, claiming that in the 1960s, they did not have the technology to fake the moon videos. And it said he was giving all kinds of numbers. Let me explain something. Go and watch the movie 2001, A Space Odyssey, by Stanley Kubrick, the guy who filmed the NASA Apollo astronauts down in the American Southwest in a warehouse. Stanley Kubrick filmed the movie in living color, 2001, A Space Odyssey, in the mid-1960s. And so they were very capable of creating Hollywood effects that would clearly show that the moon videos were faked. And even NASA has admitted that it faked the footage, the photographs and the videos. But anyway, and then there's the famous video of Buzz Aldrin drunk talking to a little girl. And the little girl goes, Mr. Spaceman, why has NASA never gone back to the moon if it was so easy to go to the moon, back then? And so Buzz is drunk and he's slurring his words. He can hardly sit up in his chair. And he's going, well, we really didn't go, and that's why we never went back, because we didn't do it in the first place. He literally says that on film. He's drunk, and sometimes drunks are more honest than regular people. But anyway, I'm not going to go into this, but all I'm saying is NASA is now creating fake evidence that it went to the moon. And it's all over the place, but they have to gear this up, because in July, it's going to stink. You got to get your hip boots. If you haven't bought your hip boots yet, go out and buy them. And make sure you get the kind that go all the way up to the neck, because the BS you're going to have to wade through coming up here very soon about the moon landing is going to be really deep. And that's where the term piled higher and deeper, PhD, comes from, is that literal. The first time I ever heard that was when I was at Cornell, the secretary of Carl Sagan, Marie Jones, typed my books, and she had that term for the PhDs. The staff at Cornell did not respect those people at all, and for good reason, because even these secretaries who were treated like dirt could recognize charlatans when they would see them. Okay. Just want to mention something along the same line about the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter. The Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter is a satellite that's in orbit around the moon, and its job is to take highly detailed pictures of the lunar surface so that future missions for manned and unmanned missions to the moon will know the kind of terrain that they would be landing on. Okay, so anyway, one might expect, or one would expect, that they would send the best cameras possible, because even a little, a 1 foot in diameter rock on the surface of the moon, if you come down and hit that with a leg of your spacecraft, it could tip it over, it could go kittywampus, it could ruin the leg, all kinds of things. So you want some detail. You want detail down to possibly something the size of a tennis ball or a golf ball even. That's the type of resolution that you would demand, and understand that even back in, say, World War II, when Kodak was building cameras for the war effort, they would build cameras that from 40,000 feet, from a B-17, you could take a picture of an area and have extremely fine detail of like railroad cars and, tracks and roads. And so the people coming in the aircraft after that would have very good maps and photography of what their targets were. Okay, so anyway, as far back as World War II, they had extremely good photography. Now, let's fast forward to today. We have Google Earth. You can go sign in to Google Earth or just Google Maps, and you can go down and you can see the car sitting outside of your house. Or say you have a boat in the backyard, or a canoe, or a lawnmower. Say you had a lawnmower next to your house, just the push kind, the little one, not the riding kind, but the push kind. You would be able to recognize the handle and the body of the lawnmower, or say you had a bicycle. Okay, let's get down to something common. A bicycle sitting outside, you had two or three bicycles sitting outside of your garage, you could go into Google Earth or Google Maps and go down, and you could see enough to make out to the where you would see that's a bicycle. Okay, now this is looking from satellites that are 120 miles up in the air, circling around Earth, and continually taking photographs of Earth's surface. You could take a pic. That's where this data is coming from, and it's digital, of course. The resolution, now you're looking through about 100 miles of atmosphere, about 60 miles total. But that's you're looking through a thick atmosphere, not just, okay, now we're going to compare this to the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, which is only 15 miles above the lunar surface, and that makes it like six times closer. So when you're six times closer, the resolution, of course, is magnified that much more. The amount of information you can get on a plate, the amount of pixels, etc. And remember, this should be a military-grade camera. Military, let's get away from Google Earth for a minute. Let's go to what the military has. The military can read a newspaper. If you're sitting on a park bench reading a newspaper or a magazine, a military satellite can read the print on that page. Now, don't you think that NASA would include a camera of that level of quality on the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter? Well, of course it would. And so then they try and post these pictures claiming that they have taken pictures, high-resolution pictures, of the lunar landing sites. And by the way, they can't tell you where these are. They can't give you the coordinates. They don't know. But anyway, they can tell from these pictures. But what it looks like is it looks like a couple pixels drawn into the picture. And then there's like little chicken scratching where the astronaut's rover went around. And then they go, oh, well, look, there's an experiment that the astronauts left. Well, wait a minute. With the camera that should be on the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, you should be able to see the rivets in the surface of the space, the vehicle that's there. You should be able to see ants walking around. I mean, that resolution, of course, there are no ants on the moon, but that's the resolution you should expect. And they say these are high-resolution pictures from the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter. It's a joke. Your cell phone camera, your third generation ago cell phone camera could have done better than that. So lots of sleight of hand going on here with NASA as we approach the alleged 50th anniversary of the alleged Apollo lunar alleged landings. Can't say alleged any more times than that. Just bring up one other quick point. Where would NASA be today without SpaceX? NASA has nothing going on. Everything that NASA is doing today and claiming to do is being done by SpaceX, a private organization. And so that's why NASA is like all in on the SpaceX deal, because it's the only game in town. All the money they're spending through the aerospace industries is not coming back with anything. Just a quick notice there, the top science-selling books in the world today, here they are, I'm going to list them off for you. Cosmos, published in 1981 by Carl Sagan along with the Cosmos series, is still the top-selling science book in the world. Number second, Ray Bradbury, The Martian Chronicles. Now, this book was published in the 1950s, and it's a science fiction book about allegedly the population, a remnant population of planet Earth, moves to Mars, and they have a war with the residents of Mars. This is a book, a sci-fi book from the 1950s. This is the second, as they claim, this is again on space.com. What a bunch of clowns. So the 1950s science fiction book Martian Chronicles by Ray Bradbury is the second highest selling science book, according to space.com. Now get this, sit down, put on your seatbelt, and I mean, really, you're not going to believe this. The third top selling science book, according to space.com's, is, I mean, sit down, make sure you got your seatbelt on. Max Goes to the Moon. This is a book that was printed in 2003 about Max, a dog that goes to the moon. It's a kid's book. Now, excuse me, this is the number three all-time selling science book, according to space.com. And coming in at a close number four is the Tom Wolfe 1979 book, The Right Stuff, which talks about World War II, post-World War II rocket planes and the Mercury capsule space program of NASA, when NASA went to space capsules and got away from the rocket plane type of design. So that's number four in the, actually number five, 1979 publication. So there you have it. Not a single modern book in the space.com list of top science books. Yeah. I mean, I just can't even stand it anymore. This is just so bizarre. I mean, you can't even make this up. Last week I talked more about desertification, but it did not hit the airwaves, unfortunately. But anyway, I was talking about half of the world, reverse desertification, etc., but also dealing with population. And I get a kick out of these web pages that say, well, population, overpopulation in the world is not the problem, it's the use of resources. Well, excuse me, where do you think the use of resources comes from? It's from overpopulation. Too many people using too many resources. Now, when you get to the highly densely populated regions of the world, use of resources, we're talking about basic resources like trees and brush to create fires so they can cook their food, or little animals that they eat until they're simply all gone. You know, places like this are Mexico, India, parts of China, where there's severe overpopulation. But I wanted to narrow in on a problem that's going on today. The influx of illegal aliens today in the United States is reaching around 100,000 per month. That means that every 5 months, there's another 500,000 people in the country. But here is the stickler. Here's the part. With the population growth in these countries, and I'm just going to mention the three, what they call the triangle countries, Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala. The population there growth is the highest in the world in terms of growth of population, the percentage growth. These three countries are more than India and China combined. And so what's happening is their population growth is about equal to the number of people that are coming across the border at about 100,000 per month, which means that they can keep putting people into the United States at that rate forever. And the ones that are already in the United States, there's a great incentive for the young girls ages anywhere from 12 to 13 and above, all the way up to 40s till they cannot have babies anymore. There is a great incentive to be continuously pregnant, because the more babies they have, the more belief they have that they have a right to stay here. And number two, if they are pregnant, they cannot be used for prostitution, because in the illegal world, that's what's going on. So anyway, the explosion of population of these countries is basically moving into the United States. And as I said, every 6 months, they increased their population by 500,000. Now, this is phenomenal growth rate, and this, the way it's going, can go on forever. The real issue here is not just illegal immigration. It's the explosive population growth that occurs in the illegal immigration crowd. And this is going on. It's happened with Mexico. The Mexicans that have come into the United States, also you have the situation where they double their population every 10 years. And with 50 million in the United States right now, that means another 50 million people by the year 2030. As I said before, by the year 2030, the United States and Mexico combined, those two countries will have probably around 700 million people, or almost 750 million people. We will be fast approaching the population of India and of China. So these are real numbers. This is very serious business, because once you hit those population levels, there's simply not enough natural resources to go around. And there's only one way to put the brakes on right now. But socially, these would be very unpopular themes to try and limit population. People would say, oh, you have no right to limit the population. Well, in China, in India, they're not doing anything. It's just they have surpassed China in population growth. In China, they've actually said, okay, we can only have one child per family. And so that means that over a period of years, as the parents die off, they will start to reduce their population. They're actually doing something about it. And it seems like a critical measure to the United States, where when I was a kid, it was not unusual. Most of my friends' families had 3, 4, 5 kids somewhere in that neighborhood. And there were some families, however, with 13 to 18 kids. If you go to certain foreign countries, it's not unusual for women to have 15 to 18 children. And then out of them, after age 10, maybe half of those survive. And after age 20, maybe another half of them survive. So it's not so visible because of the mortality rate, because of the stringent conditions in these countries. But if you remove the mortality rate that is common in third world countries, and those people survive, and you start having people with 15 to 18 kids, and those kids start having 5 to 10 kids in two generations, you have massive population growth. And that's what's happening in Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras. They're just explosive population. And as I said, it's not just illegal immigration. It's the population explosion that comes along with it. Whether they're still in Honduras, El Salvador, in Guatemala, whether they're still there and then going to come to the United States. But these countries, whether they're there or here, will keep increasing the United States population by a half a million people every 5 months. These are stark statistics. And that's only the other thing that's happening, of course, is that people are flying to these countries from all over the world and walking across or getting across with train rides or whatever, getting across Mexico to come into the United States. I just wanted to mention quickly about my paid cast. May is the month where I finally finish my dissertations, my lectures, dealing with my books, DVDs, CDs, my Recalendar Sunstar clock, the posters, etc. That's all ending in May. So I'll be starting an entirely new program of paid casts in the month of June. But this has taken a long time. I started out with my Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes book, and I went in order through all of the books. And I did this because, okay, it's great to have the books, and they're, of course, self-explanatory in a sense. But what I did is I gave a lot of information surrounding the times when these books were written, the cultural times, this mentality of people, or in the case of, say, Planet X book, the whole craziness of the whole Planet X story. And my book was very much not welcome because it was not part of the program of disinformation of Planet X. And I gave the real story of what the story that they were trying desperately to hide. I came in and was all over the radio, on television, had videos, and even the Japanese came over, interviewed me, the Chinese, the Russians came over and interviewed me, wanting to know about the true story. In fact, I've recently been contacted by other national TV outlets for discussion on other topics. I won't pre-announce any of that. But the end result is that I'm finishing up my lectures on all of what you might call my intellectual products, the books, CDs, DVDs, e-DVDs, the downloadable DVDs. I have hard disk DVDs, same with the CDs, etc., and then the Recounter Sun Star Clock and the posters. So these lectures give you a rounded out idea of the times. And that's why these will be important in 10 years and in 20 years, 50 years and 100 years. Can you imagine if somebody like Copernicus or Galileo or Kepler, we know a bit about Kepler's life. We don't know a lot too much about Galileo, but can you imagine that hundreds of years later, you had his actual voice seeing what things were like and describing what things were like in those times to get a flavor of what was going on. So anyway, that's why I'm doing this, is for posterity. And as I said, in June, I'll be starting off in a whole new direction with the paid cast. And you can join the paid cast, a very low price. I think it's $59.95, or I forget what the price is, where you get all of the back episodes going all the way back to August of 2016. That's how long I've been doing the paid cast, and it includes so many wonderful topics. If you click on the link on my webpage, it has all of the topics that I have covered over these years on the paid cast listed there. And, I mean, it's just pennies per show for the information you get. And then it's $3.95 going on into the future. Okay. Well, enough of self-promotion there, but the paid cast is a very good tool for young people, old people alike. Just a quick comment. This past week, I was approached by a group. I'm not going to say where or who or who's funding them, but they're in a state where there was a controversial election result. And there was this includes the 2016 presidential election and state elections. So that's all I'm going to say about the people that approached me. But I was approached because I had done my white paper analysis on the 2016 presidential election. And then I had an addendum. I did the analysis before the election and then after the election. And then subsequent to that, I did a similar type of analysis on the 2018 congressional and House of Representative elections. And you see the same discrepancies. And it's just amazing. The results, when the election first finished in 2016, Hillary Clinton had won 57 counties out of like 3,118, something. That's the total number of counties in the United States. And by the way, that includes cities. There's some places like the state of Virginia. There's 38 cities in Virginia that are counted as counties, even though they reside in a county, because it's kind of like they're independent states in a sense. So they're counted separately. But when you see the discrepancy in voting, only in the major cities did Hillary Clinton win by large margins. And if you go across the border to the adjacent county, like 1 mile away, in the city, she would win like 90% of the vote to 10. and you go right across the border and it's just the opposite. And you have to ask yourself, it might happen in one place, but this is consistent across the board. So what we're seeing and what the white paper shows is that there was massive cheating in metropolitan areas by the Democratic Party. And they had the primary methods that they used was they would go out and go door to door. They had volunteers that were going door to door, and the whole idea was to get everybody out to vote. But what they were really doing was collecting data. And they go up, knock on the door, hello, are you registered to vote? There's three responses. Says, yes, we are. Who are you registered to vote? Are you Democrat or Republican? Okay, if you're Democrat, okay, take down your name, make sure you get out to vote. Okay, that's a Democratic vote. If they're Republican, then they would go back and change the voter registration and then vote for those people. The biggest level of cheating came from people who said, no, I'm not registered to vote, I'm not going to vote. They would go register those people, and then they knew those people were not going to go to the polls, so they would vote for them as Democrats. Another massive cheating effort was with mail-in votes. So a lot of those people who were on the voter rolls were no longer there. They'd go to the house, knock on the door, hello, are you John and Sally Doe? No, the Does don't live here anymore. Oh, okay, thank you. They'd go away, and then the Does would do a mail-in vote, and they would fill them out and vote for Hillary Clinton. So they got massive amounts, and also the dead people. Lots of dead people voted for Hillary Clinton. So you get these massive numbers coming out of the cities. And this is all over the country. This is all over the country. And so as a result, you would find like a good example are the Rust Belt states and going up into Wisconsin and then Minnesota. And Trump was actually able to win Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Ohio. But they were very close, and there was massive cheating going on. And one of the main methods of cheating was simply to change the vote count after the election. And so all of the precincts would report up to a central point, and then at that point, they would literally change the number. And in Milwaukee, for example, during the Jill Stein recount, there were 18,000 additional votes for Hillary Clinton that did not exist, that were just simply made up at the precinct level as they sent the data up to the state level, and then, of course, from there up to the federal level. But anyway, the point I'm making is that as I went back, now they're claiming that Hillary Clinton won 487 counties. So they've actually gone in and flipped votes. Now, we saw this happening in Florida with Ron DeSantis and the governor's race down there, and Trump finally went in and stopped it because they kept coming up with more and more boxes of votes. And totally illegal, but these people, the people in the Democratic Party, are totally unscrupulous. And but anyway, the 2016 election, I did the three methods of regressive mathematical analysis on the votes, and it was very clear that Hillary Clinton got about 17 million illegal votes from this. And now this is not talking about illegal aliens voting. This is strictly, but there were a lot of illegal votes, for example, in Denver, in Los Angeles, and possibly San Francisco, and then also in Arizona, New Mexico, etc. But in many cases, states were carried, and this is one of the reasons why there's an electoral college, but even the electoral college cannot cover for the fact that it's divided into states. For example, Denver carried the entire state of Colorado. Las Vegas carried the entire state of Nevada. Minneapolis carried the entire state of Minnesota. And so if you have one place where you can have massive cheating, stuffing the ballot box, it can carry the whole state. And in fact, if the, right now they are trying to get Chicago removed from the state of Illinois. I don't know if you've heard about this, but they want to remove Chicago and put it in as its own state because the people of Illinois are tired of paying for the problems of Chicago. The wisdom of the Electoral College is that if you look at the vote results of the 2016 election and the 2018 congressional election, the people in the majority of the country, which is literally the majority of the people in the country, would be completely ruled by the people in the cities. And that's now occurring in the state governments where, for example, Minneapolis controls the population of the state. Minnesota has a population a little over 4 million. Half of those people live in Minneapolis. And so you have voting population where you have pure voting without an electoral college. You have a small regional group that controls the whole state. This is occurring right now in Canada, where Saskatchewan and Alberta are trying to get out of the Canadian Union because they're being totally controlled by the eastern big cities who control the government of Canada. And so they're basically pauper states. They're slave states. And the business climate, etc., everything is controlled by Vancouver and then the three big eastern cities, Toronto, Quebec, etc., in eastern Canada. Those are controlling all of Canada. And then the poor people out in the country have no voice at all and they get no services. This is what the United States would be like without an electoral college. And the idea that there's one vote per person, this thing that the Democrats are talking about is some kind of fairness. No, no, you would be the vast majority of people in the United States would never have their vote count ever again if that were not for the Electoral College. So there's a very good reason. And when you start going through the election maps, that is where you really see it. Because the big city areas are all very highly Democrat voting. But see, primarily that's due to stuffing the ballot box, corruption at the ballot box. It's as simple as that. Okay, enough of that. I want to remind you, last week, my May 16th program re-aired, and in there, I talk about the great climate change hoax, and specifically, I talk about the greenhouse effect. There is no such thing as a greenhouse effect. That's why very few people, the people in the climate change world, are very political. Let's say a little political correctness there. They don't talk about the greenhouse effect, because it's been thoroughly disproven in the scientific sense. And so I give my own rendition of that. And by the way, it was like in the early 1990s when I predicted a number of things. I said, companies are going to start to use the word green. You're going to have everybody's going to be putting green on their product to sell it. You have servers, you have cups, you have toilet paper. Everything that you could possibly purchase all of a sudden is green. You know, the green, whatever. The new Green Deal. So anyway, that was one issue. And the other one was that they were going to start using the green thing for political purposes. And that's what happened with climate change. But I encourage you, I demand that you go back and if you've already listened to my May 16th show once, go back again and listen again. Because, or if you know some climate approvers, let's call them that way, climate or climate deniers, let's put it that way, they would be climate deniers. Have them go back and listen to my May 16th show because it clearly shows that there is no such thing as a greenhouse effect. The climate that we live in is controlled by the sun on a minute-to-minute basis. And there's many examples, easy examples for any person, smart, dumb, or whatever, to understand. In the daytime, the sun is heats up the earth, and then as it's the earth spins around during nighttime, it loses that heat. And if it weren't for the sun constantly every day, every 12 hours we get a shot of sun again, or in the wintertime less time, in the summertime more time. But if it weren't for that, the earth would freeze up overnight, and that'd be the end of it. You could not have, the one side would just fry, and the other side would be freezing cold. So you would not have a habitable earth. Just one of the effects that that saves our planet. But the end result is that the earth loses this tremendous amount of heat that's being generated in nuclear power plants and coal plants, natural gas plants, automobiles, transportation, jet airliners, whatever, all combined. The earth loses that every night. And if you didn't have the earth spinning around again in another 8 hours or 12 hours, that would, because the wintertime hours are shorter, sometimes in the northern climates as much as 4 hours, sometimes no time at all, and no sun at all for a couple of days during the winter. Okay, or you might have longer periods of time in the summer of sun. But the end result is that the Earth's climate is very much controlled by the sun and nothing else. But I encourage you once again, go back to my May 16th show a couple of weeks ago, listen again, and I give my points throughout the show. I believe there's about 8 or 10 of them. Okay, coming up here, June 10th is the local conjunction, the inferior conjunction of Earth with Jupiter. And so on the, I believe it was the 2nd of June, is the new moon. So 2 days after is the new moon passing. And that's when we have another trigger effect for atmospheric conditions that could lead to severe storms. So in that period, from about the 2nd to the, through the 10th, up to about the, actually then we have the full moon coming just 13 days later, up to about the 15th. So any time during that time, we could be interacting with the electron stream that's between the sun and Jupiter, and we could have basically what I call the Jupiter winds. The Jupiter winds are typically straight-line winds, but they can form tornadoes and hurricanes, and it'll be an unusually windy time, although this time it's just Jupiter and Earth. And at the very beginning and at the very end will be the lunar alignments. So anyway, but it's hard to know when those connections will actually take place. But that's coming up here early June. And here's a topic that I guarantee you, you will not hear anyplace else. And that is that the Starlink satellites are starting to blink. They're expecting to put up to 12,000 of these satellites orbiting Earth, and they're going to be blinking. Oh no, I can't believe that anybody would do this and think it's a good idea. I'm out of time. We'll talk to you next week. This is James McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.